It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 481 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a special guest, and that's Madeline Holly Rosing from the Boston Metaphysical Society. She's got a great Kickstarter going on for the Book of Demons, which is the latest in the series. We delve into this great franchise, including who the characters are, how the book came to be, as well as what Madeline has in mind for the future. The Kickstarter is described this way. When a great house discovers Caitlin's ability to control demons, she is kidnapped and forced to find and enslave one. Lots of great steampunk and spiritual goings-on happening, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Madeline has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's a pleasure to welcome to the podcast Madeline Holly Rosing from a wonderful series called Boston Metaphysical Society. And there's a Kickstarter going on right now for the Book of Demons, which is the latest chapter to it. So how are you doing, Madeline?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's always good to talk with folks like you who are doing these wonderfully creative and innovative, I think is a great way to describe your series.
Books. Thank you.
Wonderful stuff. Now, Kickstarter, of course. Some people get on me because I never get to the Kickstarter stuff until I remember it about halfway through. So let's talk about the Kickstarter first, and then we'll get to the book, although I prefer to talk about the book first.
Well, we can blend that all together. That's okay. Not a problem for me.
That works.
For those in your audience who have never heard of Boston Metaphysical Society, it's about an ex-Pinkerton detective, a spirit photographer, and a genius scientist who battles supernatural forces in late 1800s Boston. We started with a 6-issue miniseries and then produced 3 sequels. The 4th sequel, called The Book of Demons, is currently on Kickstarter. We are fully funded and have gone through a number of really amazing stretch goals so far, but we do run until April 29th, so there is time to get on board.
But don't wait.
Yes, don't always, wait.
You don't have the daily heart attack right now. You don't have to look and go, oh, nobody has backed us in the last hour or two, you know, which a lot of people I know do, and they refresh.
I do that too. I'm just like everybody else. I mean, I do that too, but yeah, it's a little bit calmer, I think, for me. This is my 9th Kickstarter.
Wow.
I'm a veteran of Kickstarter, and as a friend of mine, Charlie Stickney, who does White Ash, pointed out on Twitter, I am one of the longest running series on Kickstarter. And I hadn't even thought of that until he said it. And I went, oh my God, he's absolutely right. We've been doing this for a while, and I have, you know, we wouldn't exist without the Kickstarter platform and especially the backers. The backers are everything. And because of them, we have been able to continue year after year after year. So they are all very special to me.
I have to say, I always wonder what stories we missed because Kickstarter wasn't here before it actually got underway. You know, there were probably some wonderful stories that people never got to tell because, you know, DC or Marvel or Image even at that point wouldn't pick them up. And Kickstarter makes it possible. Thank heavens for that. There have been a lot of wonderful stories I have read through Kickstarter and I go, thank heavens for Kickstarter.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of incredible indie comics out there that are at the level of Boom, you know, and Image and Dark Horse, but they have chosen not to go that route. And because of Kickstarter, we are able to still enjoy those stories. So it's, you know, the bar has been set pretty high. I think I read an article a couple of years ago that even then, I think it's even more so now, that Kickstarter could arguably be the third largest publisher of comics.
I heard it was the second, actually.
It could be the second now. Yeah, it could be the second now. Yeah.
Which is, you know, whoever's been in charge of Kickstarter, thank you. Thank you very much. Because, you know, I had a friend of mine that was saying that what we ought to do, television shows should be like this, that if we want a show, they should go out and say, hey, I'm going to do this show. Who wants to support it? And people would donate to it. We couldn't possibly raise the money to get a TV show, I don't think. Not on a network anyway. But it's a great idea for a comic, I have to say. It works well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you're telling me a little bit, how quickly was it that you guys reached your goal once you started?
6 hours.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's the best we've ever done.
Wow. See, there's a lot of people who'd like 6 hours, to be honest.
So I'm sure. It definitely takes away a lot of the stress.
Now, are you past all your stretch goals, or what's the deal with the stretch goals?
We are on our fifth stretch goal, and I do have a few more in the wings.
Oh, boy. So you planned ahead for this. That's very good. That's because some people go, stretch goals, what am I going to do? And I'm like, well, you should have thought of that. You know, I know it's scary. I know it's tough.
Yeah, I actually wrote a book called Kickstarter for the Independent Creator. It is a field guide for not only comic creators, but anyone who's a creative who wants to run a crowdfunding campaign. And one of the things I talk about in there is you should have a minimum of 3 stretch goals planned before you even launch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just in case, you know, you do well enough. But the important part about stretch goals is that you budget for them, because often people will just go, let's do this. And then the stretch goal doesn't bring in enough money to cover the production of whatever that stretch goal is, and they end up losing money. So it is important to budget your stretch goals, just as important as, you know, your regular funding goal.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people want to know the exact time that a Kickstarter is going to conclude. And according to the website, it's Thursday, April 29th at 2:02 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So don't wait until then. This is the time. Now is the time when you get done listening to this interview. That's the time to go and get on there and support, because you got to make sure this book happens and keeps going.
Yes, you know, thank you.
Big success. And we got to keep that success going if we want to have good things going. Now, I should mention, too, that I've already pledged on here.
Thank you very much.
I pledge for the comics digital bundle, as I always say to people. I don't have the physical space anymore to get all the books that I would love to have. So I have some computer room still. So I'm going to get the digital bundle, and all kinds of wonderful stuff in there. Just 156 pages in one, 44 in another. I'm going to be reading all day, Boston Metaphysical Society. So I'm looking forward.
Plus, we've already gone, the two of the stretch goals were additional digital comics. So you'll be getting 12 additional comics on top of that and we'll probably make our next stretch goal, which means you'll get a total of 18.
Oh boy, that's going to be a nice day of reading. I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely.
It's going to be good. Now, let's talk about the book. I really want to get into it because it's a really fascinating story. I'm always interested in that time period, you know, because it's pre-telephone, it's pre-iPhone, pre-all that stuff. You couldn't call each other right away to let people know what was going on. It was only about the X-Files when I watched the show. They suddenly had these, you know, the cell phones, and they could talk to each other and let each other know what was going on, which took a little of the drama out of things. But you know, you don't have any of that. That's the good news. Although I don't know what steampunk, are there steampunk cell phones around?
Well, it's not cell phones, and there actually are telephones. It's just that not everybody has them, and obviously there's no cell phones, but we're talking about rudimentary electronics circa 1895. And this is when this takes place, at 1895 and 1896. So, yeah, you do have the telephone. But and you do have some fun steampunky kind of weapons. You know, it is a steampunk is a subgenre of science fiction. So yeah, you do have the fun fiction part of it in there, but I do make it a point to have the science correct when I can, and which is great. But sometimes I, you know, literary license takes over, and you can't always. But no, it is fun to be able to have the science correct within it. You probably don't know this, but one of the main characters, our genius scientist in my little pitch, his name is Granville T. Woods. He was an actual historical figure. Mm-hmm. He was an African-American scientist. He was originally from Ohio. I brought him to Boston because I'm the writer and I can do that. And yeah, he's part of the team. Mm-hmm. And in the original 6-issue miniseries, I do have Bell, Edison, Tesla, and Houdini, who are an integral part of the storyline.
See, I've got to ask you about that because there are societies of people who follow real life characters from that era. And if you don't get that character 100% right according to what they believe, they might let you know that. Have you run into that situation?
Actually, only once. A gentleman didn't like the fact that he felt that I made Tesla a bad guy. And it wasn't so much that I had made Tesla a bad guy, is that he was a complicated man. And I feel that, you know, as a writer, and particularly in fiction, that this is not a biography of these characters. This is a fictionalization. And I've done a ton of research, and I look at who these people were to the best of my ability, and let that inform their characters, but not define them. And Tesla is still the obsessive person that he was in real life, but his decision-making, you know, may not be in line with the good of everyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's good. You want everybody to be a hero. You want the shades of gray in these kinds of things. And that's one of the things I love about the book, is that there are lots of shades of gray going on. I mean, even the historical characters, which some people might know, they don't necessarily act the way that the legend might make them seem to be. And I like that about that. I really enjoy, you know, seeing how these characters interact with each other. And I think Houdini's in here.
Yes.
He's one of my favorites. I always found him to be a, you know, a challenging person to write. He's probably one of those ones that the research was probably a good thing to do on him. Was there anybody that you found surprising or challenging to do?
No, not really. They were all interesting to me. To me, Bell was always kind of the father figure of the group. And when I talk about Bell, Edison, Tesla, and Houdini, for those who are not familiar with the story, they make up a group of people who are trying to figure out a way to stop this interdimensional entity from entering our space, our dimension. And they are brought together because they each bring a different dynamic together. And Houdini brings a humanity with him, and the rest, you know, they don't work very well together, which is kind of fun. And so, no, I did research on them, but, you know, like I said, the research informed but didn't define who they were.
Mm-hmm. Now, talk about Caitlin a little bit, if you will. She's the kind of the main female in the Metaphysical Society. She based on a real person? Is she a construct? How did she come to be? Who is she?
She's completely fictional. I created her because I wanted to do a cross genre between the steampunk and the paranormal. And she is the medium and spirit photographer. But she also socially is lower class, and the Irish in my world are treated pretty badly. And she's only treated marginally better amongst the middle and upper class because she's useful to them. Mm-hmm. And for quite a long time, her mother doesn't realize that she has inherited this gift from her father and that she's actually working for Samuel and Granville. And it's not until the sequels that, you know, that goes to hell in a handbasket.
Is she based on somebody? I mean, is her character... I'm sorry.
No. She's a fictional character that I made up.
Okay, because a lot of writers like to – I always talk about the David Peterson interview. I did one of the first ones, and I asked him. I said he did a book called Mouse Guard, and I always wondered, were the mice based on King Arthur's Round Table? And he said, no, the characters are based on my friends. I said, I know how they're going to act, so it was easy to write them. I went, oh. I didn't expect that at all. So I'm always interested in how people do that. I mean, where the characters come from. I think that's really interesting.
And David's brilliant. So that's, I love his work. I know my husband he has all of his books. But no, each of them came, I mean, probably, you know, Granville came with the most history behind him because he actually existed. And even then, I created a family for him, which I don't think he actually had. He did in real life. He did have a brother, but I gave him a sister and a niece, so he'd have more of a family unit for his character to work off of. Samuel is essentially alone. His parents are gone. His wife is gone. And this is his whole life. Mm-hmm. So
it's really interesting. It's they're gripping characters, but you've actually touched on something I wanted to be sure I talk with you about.
Okay.
Some people, when they go back into time periods, because they're afraid modern readers won't necessarily like the way they behaved in that era, they translate current ideas and morals into that time period. There's a little of that. I mean, because they're forward thinking people, there's a lot of amongst the society, there's that. But the great thing I really enjoy about the book is that the rest of society is the way I understand they behaved in that era. And I like that. There's interesting things to learn about that. I don't, you know, we aren't all always the same in the way that we treat people and, you know, people of color and women and things like that. You actually make a point at times to show in that era that there were people who didn't necessarily live up to what the society might believe in. And I found that to be a very fascinating and realistic thing. I like to see where we came from sometimes. And this book really does a great job, I thought, of showing that they didn't live like we do back at that point. And there's growth that's going to take place. I really love that.
Yeah, this is alternate history. I do describe Boston Metaphysical more as alternate history than steampunk. The steampunk, it's more steampunk-y. You will have the flavor and the gadgets, but it's not what drives the story. It's the character. It's an extremely hierarchical society that they live in. It's extremely rigid, and all of them push the envelope of it. But when they push the envelope pushes back, and sometimes they pay a price for pushing against societal norms. And you'll see that even more so in the sequels. You'll see a little bit more and more of that, what they have to deal with, on a day-to-day basis. But they're really outliers within their own society. And particularly the great houses, which are the aristocracy. Because this alternate history that I've developed, the United States is no longer called the United States. It's called the Great States of America. And they're essentially a parliamentary oligarchy. Hmm. And the only people who have the right to vote are the families in the great houses. Nobody else does. That's gone into a little, actually much more so in the prequel novel that I wrote called A Storm of Secrets. And I have, I'm in the process of writing a trilogy, which is also a prequel, which covers what I call the House Wars, which is the equivalent of the American Civil War, but with set within the Boston metaphysical universe. And that's been a lot of fun. So obviously I'm an American history buff.
Which is good. That's a good thing. Cause you know, I like to see other time periods and see how people, you know, functioned in those times. And I think that this book does a tremendous job of, you know, the character of color, particularly. I really enjoy the way he interacts with people, and he understands that not everybody's going to treat him the way that he would like to be treated. And he, sometimes I think that he actually finds humor in that. And it's just an interesting how these people, and of course, the Caitlin and how she's treated. And, you know, when right in the beginning, when she's earning her place, shall we say, in the society, she has to overcome a lot of stuff. But see, I think that's a good thing to see. I think that, that people today, we kind of take for granted that everything's going to be fair and everything's going to be handled well. And in that time period, it wasn't that way. And yet there were people that excelled against that. And it, I think it's really encouraging to see, like Caitlin, how she, you know, develops as a character and grows within the society. I really loved that about the book. That was one of the things that I couldn't wait to see what she was going to do next and how she was going to respond to people who didn't necessarily respect her. I just think you did a great job with that. I really did.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun. And after, you know, when I wrote, there was the first sequel, which was The Scourge of the Mechanical Man. And that was a lot of fun because that was, I had always planned that. And that just kind of finished off the Tesla arc. And also it was a lot of fun to be able to put Granville and Tesla in the same room and force them to work together and the hell, it just annoyed each other, but yet they complimented each other when they, you know, finally put the egos away, and solve the problem. And then, you know, meanwhile, Caitlin has to deal with the, after she dealt with the shifter, which was the interdimensional being from the first miniseries, that, you know, having dealt with that, it changed her. And what's really fun in the Book of Demons is you get to see a little bit more of the scientific method as Alma tracks her progress and makes her use her telekinetic abilities to, you know, to learn how to control them and exercise them. But, you know, keeping data, keeping a journal. So they keep track of what's going on with her. And so it's a lot of fun to do that.
Now, speaking of keeping track, one of the things when there are multiple chapters in a great story like this one, I like to ask, what's the proper order to read the Boston Metaphysical Society? What's the thing you should read first? Is that the first book? Can we talk about that a little bit? Let people know how this all comes together.
Sure. I always recommend that people start with the original 6-issue miniseries, which is now in trade paperback. The artist on that was Emily Hugh. And from that, everything else springs, so to speak. Everything prior to the original 6-issue miniseries, I'm doing in prose. So there's a novel and there's an anthology of short stories and novellas. But everything in the timeline that's after the 6-issue miniseries is going to be in graphic novel form. So if you're starting with the graphic novel, The first sequel would be The Scourge of the Mechanical Men. Then it would be The Spirit of Rebellion. And after that is Ghosts and Demons. And then the fourth one is what's on Kickstarter right now, which is called The Book of Demons. And it is a standalone, but it is a continuation of Ghosts and Demons. It's sort of what I call my little duology. It kind of finishes it up.
Mm-hmm. This is great. I like for people to know that, because some people stumble onto the third book and they don't understand. They may not be able to pick up all the things they'd like to understand. And so that's why I always ask people, what's the sequence in which to do these kinds of things? So I'm glad that.
Yeah, I actually have a page devoted to that on my website. Just story chronology. So if anyone's ever confused, they can go to story chronology, and it gives a complete chronology of not only the graphic novels, but the prose as well.
And why don't you tell people where the website is? What's the web address?
Very simple. BostonMetaphysicalSociety.com.
Okay, very good. And you go there, and can you buy stuff through there, or is it?
You can buy through my website if you want something signed. You can actually order the graphic novel and the first sequel, The Scourge of the Mechanical Man, through your local comic book store. Mm-hmm. They're out in Diamond right now. Or you can order it directly from Source Point Press. Source Point Press picked up the original six-issue miniseries a year and a half ago, and then picked up all the sequels earlier this year. So they're all going to be hitting Diamond and your local comic book store. So I always encourage people that if you hear this later and you miss out on the Kickstarter, you can always go and order directly from your local comic book store or through Source Point Press.
Yeah, Source Point Press has a lot of really interesting books, I have to say. I wasn't surprised when I heard that your franchise, shall we say, is going that way, because they do a lot of stuff that I really like. So I'm glad it's there, because I think that's a good home for your stuff.
It is. It is. It's been a great home. I've actually known Travis for quite a while. He's the editor-in-chief. And they really thought outside of the box during the pandemic and have come out even stronger. So I chose well.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. That's a good place to go. Now, one of the things I noticed on your on the Kickstarter page, and by the way, it's great that you can go to the stores. I want to again reemphasize, if you want the books, don't wait. Go to the Kickstarter and get them there, because there's a lot of good ways to support. And it supports Madeline here really well to do that. So we want to make sure you do that. I noticed on the Kickstarter that you were a nominee for the Geeky Awards in 2014. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? What did you get nominated for? How did that come to be?
It was for Best Graphic Novel. And I'm not even sure how that came to be. I guess I had been nominated by a number of other people. We had started as a web comic just to get the work out there. And so people started picking up on it, and they submitted it, and it went through a series of judges. I didn't submit it. I had no idea until I was like, oh, guess what? You know, you've been nominated for Best Graphic Novel, which was pretty amazing. So we're very pleased without that. We didn't win. That was okay, because actually a very good friend of mine won. So I was very, if I wasn't going to win, I wanted him to win. So that worked out really well.
Okay. Well, thanks to the person who nominated that. That was very nice of you. You got a little extra publicity out of that, and hopefully sold a couple more books. Never a bad thing. Uh-huh. The way to do it. So that's very good stuff. I also noticed too, see, I'm always interested in the little add-ons and things like that as well. You have a coloring book.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about the coloring book some, because, you know, there's some people who are big into coloring books, and I actually like the look of yours. I think it's actually quite nice. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? And, you know,
Where
does that fit in the whole thing?
It's just Alejandro Lee, who I'd been wanting to work with for a while, as you can see, is a marvelous illustrator. And, you know, he was able to get him on board. I was thrilled to death. But the reason I did the coloring book is that I really wanted to put something on my convention table that was for all ages. Because Boston Metaphysical Society is at minimum for ages 10 and above, just because, not because there's violence and bodice ripping and things. There is some violence, but there are some scary parts for little kids. So, you know, it depends on the child, and I leave that up to the parents. I just, I will show them what I deem either the scary or the, you know, possibly violent parts, and let them decide whether it's appropriate or not. But yeah, that's really why I want to do the coloring book, because it also, well, it introduces the characters and obviously has the three main characters, and Alma's in there as well, plus the demon and Duncan the ghost and her mother and Andrew O'Sullivan, her father, which you only see three pages of him in the first issue before his demise. But he is actually very prominent in the novel A Storm of Secrets, and in a couple of the short stories that I wrote. So, but it was just a great way to have something that was literally, it was for all ages to enjoy.
Great. That's good. Now, on the other end of the spectrum is the, you have these lapel pins.
Oh, yeah.
That I find really cute. I mean, who put those together? I mean, you have one of them. I think there's one that's unique to this book, and then there's a whole collection of seven of them. Talk about that and how that came to be.
Well, I attend steampunk conventions. And if you ever go to a steampunk convention, you will know that the people dress up. And they like pins and they like hats and they like all sorts of fun stuff. So it was just natural that I would come up with a pin to sell at steampunk conventions. So I started with originally, our first one was an owl pin, which you see the sticker on the box on the Kickstarter homepage. That used to be a pin. We don't have that anymore. So the people who have it have something unique, because we will never produce that again. And then it just started becoming a thing that every Kickstarter, we would have a new pin. And so the first few years were, to me, pretty obvious, because I had a Tesla pin and then a dirigible, because these are very steampunk themed kind of things. And then I started reaching out every year on Facebook. I would have a little contest and say, like, hey, I'm looking for ideas for our next, you know, Kickstarter pin. Whoever one I choose and it gets produced, I'll mail one to you. So that's what we did for the last year. So, you know, what you see as the, you know, the antique camera and the teapot and the bowler hat and the plague doctor, those all came from fans who had ideas. And I would just like, oh, yeah, I like that one. Even though the plague doctor, that was kind of funny, because the woman who won the contest, she says, I would think that would be kind of obvious. And I said, yeah, when you put it there, I kind of went like, yeah, duh, that would be, you know, perfect for this year. And Alejandro came back on board again to do the design for it. And I have to say that the picture doesn't really do it justice. It looks better in real life. It did. But yeah, the pins and things like that, it's a very steampunk thing.
Oh, very cool. Because I know some steampunk folks down here in Florida. I don't know if you know Matt Knowles or Steph Cannon, who do Heirs of Isildur.
Yes. We're actually working together on some cross promotion right now. Yeah, we cool. All know each other. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Because they have some wonderful stuff too.
Absolutely.
You guys ought to do a crossover. I think at some point it'd be great fun to see that. It'd be lots of fun to have. But as far as, I've got to ask a question though, because when I look at you have a great video at the top of the Kickstarter page, but it has a woman of color on there, and I'm probably missing something, but who is she? Is she somebody we're going to run into, or have we already run into her and I missed it? What happened?
That's Alma, and she was introduced in the second sequel, The Spirit of Rebellion.
Okay.
And that's where she and Caitlin met. It's right now, it's the only book that's set in Philadelphia and not in Boston. I don't want to ruin it for people, but yeah, she and Samuel end up in Philadelphia briefly. and they meet then. Alma is also a scientist, though not as educated as Granville, because she just wasn't able. She's actually an accountant by profession. But they meet in a boarding house and go through some events together. Like I said, I don't want to ruin it. And end up by the end teaming up, and Caitlin finds a new direction and starts working in union organizing, which was actually very, that was a thing. And during that time period here in the United States, because, you know, labor was being abused and there was a lot of child labor. And so she and Alma teamed up to work on that, and then often get sidetracked because of Caitlin's abilities. So now, yeah, I made Alma, she's part of the team now.
Oh, okay. I remember her now. Yeah, now I remember that. Very good. Oops. While we're talking, your number just went up again. I'd like that when that happens. It's always a good thing.
I know. I think we're actually going to break we're going to make the stretch goal tonight.
Oh, cool. Oh,
our next stretch goal, yeah.
That's very good. I always like it when that happens. When I'm talking, I'm looking at the page and the number goes up, I'm thrilled. I think that's great. Although they can't hear what we're talking about. It's not going to be posted until Sunday morning. But I want to see that go up. I want to see those things. Which, of course, leads me to the next question. If you are – this is – Book of Demon is what, the fourth?
It's the fourth sequel, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, fourth sequel. So – I'm sure you've got more sequels planned. I don't want to spoil stuff, but do you have any idea about like how many more stories you might have in mind for these guys?
It's like, I'll always think of something. It's not, I always come up with ideas. It's not a problem. The end of the Book of Demons does segue into a new storyline. Okay. And they're all going to be leaving Boston for a little while. And so we get to travel across the country to a certain place in Colorado where a certain person has set up shop, specifically Colorado Springs. I'm just going to, for people who know, they know what I'm talking about, which is not going to make Caitlin happy at all. Okay. But because of the circumstances, the way it ends, they kind of need to get the hell out of Dodge, so to speak.
Okay.
So yes, I haven't decided whether it's going to be a 3 or 4 issue arc yet. I have to. Okay. I have a lot of other things I have to do first before I get there.
Okay. Well, it's very good. It's great that you're busy. I think that's a good sign for those of us who are fans, that there are good things coming and all kinds of other things. That does make me ask, though, I'm sure this has got to be something that's keeping you really busy. Are there other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of?
Absolutely. We are in pre-production right now for the first Boston Metaphysical audio drama.
Hmm.
It is set during the time period of the original 6-issue miniseries, so only the 3 original leads, Caitlin, Samuel, and Granville, are in it. It is a full cast, and it'll be 8 episodes of about a half hour each. We are in the process. We're doing callbacks this coming weekend for the 3 leads, and hopefully I will... probably next week, I will be announcing who the 3 voice actors are who will be playing them. We got some terrific talent. It's really outstanding. And then there'll be a casting call for the supporting characters. A couple of them I had already cast from the people that came in for the casting call for the 3 leads. And I've been very fortunate in that my team is the writer, script editor, and sound engineer and composer of another audio drama called Sage and Savant, which was on for 6 years. It is also a steampunk theme story. It's tons of fun. It's a time travel steampunk. It's really terrific. And so it's Eddie Louise and her husband Chip, who I hired. And so, yeah, I don't know anything about audio drama, but they know a hell of a lot. So that's why, yes, absolutely. So It's gonna be good. We've already got the theme song. We have like cover art, and I'm looking to run a Kickstarter for that in October.
Oh wow, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be so much fun. So, you know, we really didn't know how long this pandemic was gonna last, so we figured, okay, let's just go do this. So, I wrote that and the first novel in the trilogy and finished this up. And so, yeah, I've been pretty busy over the past year.
Wow. Sounds like it. But Boston Metaphysical is one that can keep you busy, sounds like. You got the audio and then the books and stuff like that. But anything outside of this, or do you kind of keep to this for the moment?
Well, at this point, it pretty much takes up all my time. I am thankful that every once in a while I get asked to do a short story for someone's anthology. So I get to play with somebody else's IP. And that's always a nice little breather because it's usually no more than, 4 to 8 pages of script. And it's always fun to play in someone else's sandbox. Mm-hmm. And then hand it off and let them deal with the production of it all. It's like, here, hand it to your artist. I'm done. Bye. But it's just a good way to, exercise my brain in other ways.
Very good. Very good. Now, you're going to announce the people. Is that going to be on the website or social media? How are you going to announce those?
Pretty much everywhere. I'll announce it, obviously, through the Kickstarter. I'll announce it on social media, my Facebook, on Twitter, probably Instagram as well. And through I have a newsletter if people want to sign up. And I only send a newsletter once a month, so it's not annoying. I realize we all get so many emails that it drives us crazy. But yeah, I make a point, just it's once a month. It gives you gives you an update on all things Boston Metaphysical. And then I add in, I do reviews for Fanbase Press of both comics and novels and other things. So I throw in a few reviews, and if I run across any fun or interesting articles, I'll put that in as well. So it's like a nice, 5-minute read, maybe 10 if you want to go, read one of the reviews or something. But sign up either through my on Facebook or through my website.
Facebook, is it under Boston Metaphysical Society?
Yes. Yes.
And Twitter as well, all those?
Twitter, it's, if you just type in Boston Metaphysical, it'll come up. But Twitter is M. Holly Rosing. That's MHOLLYROSING. And Instagram is MC Holly and the numeral 1.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Someday this has got to make it onto Sci-Fi or some other wonderful channel. This is be perfect for this, because I'd love to see it. This would make a wonderful drama on television or a movie or something like that. I hope audio drama gives people ideas. That's what I'm hoping, to get those things and have that really happen, because this is a well-told story with great characters. I can't wait for the next thing to come along. I'm so looking forward to it. And, Madeline, I just hope you keep this up for a long time, because we need good stories like this. And I think that this is one of those that we could enjoy for quite a long time to come. So I would just ask, keep it up and make the good stuff keep coming.
Well, thank you very much. That is my intention.
Very good.
Though I hope to take, once I'm fully vaccinated and the world opens up, go take a vacation. My husband and I, we really need a vacation. So that would be nice.
Well, I hope you get to enjoy it. That'll be great. It'll be fun for you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.